day, and thank you for listening. I'm Ali Smulders. Lori Harrison and I will be talking to you about the way things were. Tales from Lopez Island. We realized that many of the newcomers have never heard any of these tales. And really, it would be too bad if all of that got lost. So our idea is to have a different guest every time, sometimes maybe the same guest, a guest who has to talk a lot, and you will hear stories about the way things were maybe 100 years ago or 50 years ago or even 25 years ago, because things have changed on the island little by little, just the way they're changing today. Our guest today is Mary Harris, Mary McLeod Harris. And she came to this island when she was less than 2 weeks old. Lori?
Thank you, Allie, and welcome, Mary. So yes, I think a good place to begin today is just to hear from Mary about her parents, when they came to Lopez, and just to get that, establish that question, Mary, of when did your mom get here, when did your dad get here, and when did you arrive?
Well, I arrived when I was 10 days old from Anacortes. But my mother was raised at Richardson as Mary Higgins, and my dad came from Scotland in 1913. However, he went to the First World War and came back and bought the farm, which is the first farm south of the modern school, in 1919. So we were raised on the 80-acre farm in the middle center of the island. And there was four of us children, and we walked to center school. And what more do you want?
Well, for example, when you say center school, I don't know what you're talking about, Mary. Where was center school, and how long was that walk?
Center school is center school. Pretty much the middle of the island. It is now the Grange Hall. And it was a two-room school with all 8 grades. And everybody that could walk, that's where they went. Of course, you got to remember there was other schools on the island. Mud Bay had an 8-grade school. Lopez had 8 grades. And Port Stanley had 8 grades. And each, you know, if you were close enough to walk, that's where you went. Until 1937 when they consolidated. And that's another story.
So, Mary, when you say a two-room schoolhouse, I think of Little House on the Prairie. I think of Anne of Green Gables. Can you give us some details about what it was like? Did you really write on slates? Did you have electricity in your classroom? Some details.
Of course there was no electricity. There was no electricity on Lopez Island. I mean, if we had a light, well, that was it, a lamp. No, we didn't go to anything at night at the school. It just had big wood stoves, and the boys had to stoke the fires, and there was two teachers. They split the rooms, you know, 4 grades in each room. And as far as activities, we didn't have, you know, sports. What were you going to play? We only had 24 kids. And so we didn't play against other schools. There was no teams. We didn't know what teams were. We just went out. We did have a volleyball net once. But no, a little baseball. Very simple.
You know, earlier, Mary, you were telling me that in those days there wasn't a lot of travel back and forth, north to south on the island, and that you might not have even really known the kids who lived on the south end or the kids that lived on the north end.
You are right. No, we did not mix with the other schools particularly. If we saw them, it was probably at like 4th of July, Odland Park, or something going on at Woodman Hall. No, there was no inter-school activities that I know of. We just each went to our own school.
But more than that, I'm wondering, it sounds like there wasn't much interconnect. I think, did you describe it once to me that there were like 3 separate communities on Lopez and not that maybe the easiest way to get from north to south on the island in those days wasn't necessarily by road, or did you ride your pony? Did you go on the boat? It sounds like you had three separate communities here rather than one very connected community that we have today. Did I get that right, or what can you tell us about that?
Well, of course, I can remember horse and buggies, but I wasn't really part of it. There were a few cars on the island, very few, probably a dozen. That's the way you went. Otherwise, you walked. You walked to everything, or hitched a ride, because they were separate communities. Richardson was a village in itself, so to speak. And Lopez was one, Port Stanley was one. And the South End, that was another part. Anything past whatever was known as Mud Bay. And, you know, that's the way it was. We didn't know any different.
I have a crazy question. Were the two rooms in school separated, or could you listen in to the other room? Because my dad used to say that he always was listening in to the other room, and so there were 1, 2, 3 in one room and 4, 5, 6 in the next room, but he managed to go from 1 to 3 and from 3 to 5 because he listened in and he had already taken in what was going on there. Did you have that opportunity?
No, they actually had good walls and doors between the two rooms. However, I think we were distracted a lot by other classes, and probably that's why we didn't get as much education as we should have from the one that we were getting. I mean, because that's true. They, you know, it was really quite disruptive when you think about it, to be listening to what the teacher was teaching the fourth grader when you're really still in the first grade or whatever it was.
So, Mary, you lived on this 80-acre farm. You said it's the farm that is directly south of today's of the school in the center of the island today. And I'm just wondering what that experience was like. Were you pretty, you know, today we're talking so much about being locally grown and eating local and all of that. My guess is that was part of your natural life in those days, but maybe you could tell us more about that. What was it like living on the farm?
Well, we didn't know any different. But true, 80-acre farm, and, you know, we had cows and pigs and chickens and gardens and fruit trees, and we were self-sufficient, more or less. Chickens, you know, what was there that you didn't have, except a few things that you did go to Richardson or Opus to buy. And the farm was one of those farms that raised all the grain and hay for the cows. I mean, probably had 25 cows, milking cows, and all in those days, my dad milked them by hand and shipped the cream to Friday Harbor to the San Juan County Dairymen's Association to make sour cream butter, and the milk was separated. And a lot of people don't know what a separator is, but they ought to know, because that's what splits the milk in between the skim milk and the cream. And believe me, I didn't like washing the separator parts either. But, they raised their own grain, and they had thrashing crews that came in and took the grain away from, whatever you do to get the grain from the husks. And, the haying crew came when it was time to hay, put the hay in the barn for the next winter for the cows. And at one time, they had a pea-growing association, and they grew peas and shipped them off to Seattle. Everything was shipped off by big freight boat out of Richardson. And so things like that was shipped to Seattle.
So this farm was for your family's income, too. You made enough food and produce to feed the family, and then the excess was shipped off for income. You're giggling.
And what did you think paid the mortgage, girl?
Yeah, okay.
That cream check. But there was, you know, I can remember it was just a few dollars. It really was. It wasn't much. But you know, those were the days, and truly, my dad would work for somebody for a dollar a day to put in a fence or do something. It was, you helped everybody else around. It was tough times. It really was a very simple life. I guess it was a good place to raise children, but they you know, we were pretty self-sufficient. I guess that's what you would call it.
Did your father have any help on the farm?
Occasionally, they would have what they called a hired man. And there were always people showing up on the island that wanted to work, and they'd go from farm to farm for a while. But 90% of it was my mother was his helper. Gosh, milk cows, I mean, just, it was really a hard life. They worked really hard. You know, I can, and that was with like two horses. Later, my dad got a tractor, and later he got, you know, baling machines and milking machines, and there was some progress, but the beginning of farming was very simple. But we survived it.
Was Richardson the only store on island? Where did you shop?
Lopez had a market. I think it was the first one was like Middleton's or something, but later it was the Lopez Purity store. But that was quite a ways. And so most of the few things that we bought was from Richardson. Well, at one time there was a store at Port Stanley. That's where the post office was. When I went away to high school, which was 1942, the mail, my address was Port Stanley, Washington. And they had the post office there, and then I don't know what year it moved to over to the Lopez Village and became Lopez Island's post office.
At that time, the ferry was also at Port Stanley, landed at Port Stanley. There still is the old landing rocks that you can see on the beach here.
Well, it wasn't really a ferry, but that's the boat that I came back from Anacortes on, all those boats that went in and out of Port Stanley. There was a boat that went out of Lopez to Friday Harbor and probably went everywhere else to Victoria. And Richardson was really, though, the main place where the freight and everything came and went. And you could ride on the Mohawk for about 50 cents to go to Seattle.
How about that? Mm-hmm. That's something to think about with our ferry fares today.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It was called the Mohawk.
The Mohawk was the ship that went to Seattle, and I think it was like once a week came with freight and or people. In fact, my husband Howard arrived on Lopez Island on the Mohawk. I think it cost $1.50 or something to ship him up here. But as if we went later, and that, I don't know what year the ferry started going to Upright Head. I mean the smaller ferries. We certainly didn't have ferries like today. And it was one a day, two a day, going and coming. It wasn't like what we have now.
Which brings me to the question, how often did you kids get off the island?
Oh, once a year. I mean, we did not go off. I think if we had a toothache, we went to Friday Harbor or Anacortes. The big thing maybe was guest day in Anacortes when, I don't know, the Anacortes merchants gave you something for free. And maybe the San Juan County Fair in Friday Harbor. Unless we went to visit relatives somewhere, my parents had relatives like in Vancouver or Seattle. No, we did not go off island. I mean, can you imagine the cultural shock I had when I went off to high school in Cedar Row Woolley?
Tell me, did you have special celebrations for the different seasons? Since all of you were here most of the time, did you have a harvest festival or anything like that? Or did you have Halloween?
Well, I never heard of any festivals, I'll tell you that. We were lucky. We had 4th of July. Seemed that was a national holiday. But Halloween, you know, I'm not sure that we knew what trick-or-treating was. I'm serious. I don't think we did. I do know that myself and someone else I will not name right now did a Halloween trick on somebody, and I guess some outhouses got tipped over. So somebody must have known that Halloween was that type of a season. Most things were like family-oriented families, and there were a few families on the island where most of them were all related to each other. It was ironic, but the poor McLeods weren't related to anybody. Well, we were. The Higgins, my mother's brother, lived at Richardson, and they had two boys. And so we did and we had one great aunt that lived up the road. But we weren't like the average families that were related to each other.
What about the telephone system in those days? So when you were a little sprout, there was no telephone on the island, is that right?
No, we always had a telephone. In fact, the year my brother was born, my mother had them put in the long distance phone in case they wanted to call the doctor. But it was only local. There were only two long distance phones on the island that I know of. And if you wanted to call long distance, you went to their house and called. Or if you got a message, they would call you and say, somebody's trying to call you from Seattle or somewhere. And yes, we had party lines, and if you lifted the receiver, you could hear the gossip. And you know, it was a crank telephone on the wall, so many rings, and that's yours.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here, what's the next question? So what did you guys do for fun in those days? It sounds like work life was a little bit serious, but I sure don't know you as a serious person, Mary Harris. So I'm sure there was some fun along the way. Was there ice skating? What did you do?
Well, I guess they had ice skating when the marshes froze, but I didn't go to that. Mm-hmm. No, we didn't have a lot of activities. I don't know what really, what did we do for fun? We worked. We had our chores. Gosh, I guess I went to 4-H club and a few things like that, but just neighborhood stuff.
Did you have picnics?
Yes, they did have picnics. And as you know, it's been recorded that the first birthday club met at a picnic down on some beach, on I think maybe it was at the Trollness Beach, in about 1922. They did have picnics. That seemed to be the one thing that people did. They had, I don't know who called them together, but they had picnics.
Maybe that is the origin of the Lopez potluck, because Lopez is really famous for good potlucks, and people bring the best of food. Do you suppose that started with the picnics, where everybody ate a little bit of each other's food?
Well, it's possible, but I don't think we used the term potluck. I don't think we knew what the word meant. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a picnic, and everybody brought something. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what the new words that we're learning.
Okay, so there were these four elementary schools on Lopez, and then somewhere along the line in the early 30s, it was decided that the schools would consolidate. And around about 1939, the school that we have in the center of the island opened as the consolidated school, and all the kids started attending. Did I have that story right, Mary?
Well, you didn't have the 1939 right, because okay. It didn't happen until I think 41 or 2. I think the first class was 42. But that was in 37 is when they consolidated, and therefore they had a couple of buses they had to buy to bus the children from each school. So like first, second, and third, maybe fourth grade, fifth, sixth grade, seventh and eighth grade went to Center. 4, 5, and 6, I think, went to Mud Bay. I got to get this straight. 7th and 8th. Okay. 7th and 8th were at Lopez at the library. 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, or 4th, went to Mud Bay. Then they decided to have a high school at Port Stanley. So that must have taken 9, 10, and 11. There was no accredited high school. Mm-hmm. So therefore, that's why we went off island to finish, you know, some education. I went off and didn't take, so I came back.
Allie, you looked like you had a question there.
I wanted to ask you, you mentioned once that there was a story about your teenage years that nobody would believe. What was that all about?
I can't tell you what that was about. Now, you must know, I don't know what that was about. There's a lot of things that
you couldn't be telling. How about the role of church in those days?
Well, to us, Center Church was it. Okay. And we walked to Center Church for Sunday school. There wasn't always a minister there. It wasn't always, but when there was, that was where we went. My mother played the pump organ, and Yeah, and later, I think they had Sunday school at Lopus, and I think they had Sunday schools other places, but for us, Center Church was it.
Mm-hmm. So your mom played the pump organ. What we haven't spoken about yet is that your dad played the bagpipes, the only bagpiper in all the San Juan Islands, you were telling us. Can you tell us a little more about them?
Yes, my mother played the piano beautifully. She took lessons. Her teacher was, you'd all remember Romaine Ritchie. His mother, Mrs. Ritchie, taught my mother to play the piano beautifully. And so she was able to play the pump organ when it was an emergency. But my dad went to Scotland in 1936 and returned with bagpipes and kilts, which he had learned to play when he was a child and young man in Scotland. So that was our first experience of seeing. And of course, as I say, he played them on the Woodman Hall stage, and of course us children were a little embarrassed, but we learned later that we should have been proud of him, because he did play them until he was about, I think maybe 90 was his last time he played for anybody. And we have brought the pipes back to the island and the kilts, and someone is learning to play them. We've had them restored, and we're really excited about that.
So the pipes are still with you?
Well, we've loaned them out. Yes, it's still family, and we've loaned them, and they're being played, and we're just so pleased that they're being played and used.
Sure.
It's just great.
You know, I think Allie and I would like to hear some island stories. Probably all the listeners would like to hear some stories from the old days. We were talking a little bit earlier about the wave, the island wave, and whether or not, what the real derivation of, how that began. Maybe there are a lot of versions, but Mary, can you tell us your version?
Well, my version of the wave is that we knew everybody on the island, and when you saw them, when you passed them on the road, of course you waved. Well, I won't name names, but some new people came to the island and somebody told them that, oh, that's a sign the sheriff's on the island. Well, our sheriff lived in Friday Harbor and he did come over occasionally. I think he came to check to see if anybody had a driver's license or something, which half the people didn't have driver's license, they didn't have license plates, you name it. But anyway, somebody came up with the idea that, oh, that's a signal that the sheriff is here. Well, we all knew that was not true. We learned to wave because it was a polite thing to do when you saw somebody on the road.
A very simple explanation. Can you remember when you got electricity?
1937, I think. 36, 35. 35, I don't know. I should know. I should be able to say yes, because I can certainly remember. It was a big thing that this family came from Forks and brought a generator system and put it in down right close to where the Islander is now and across the road. And he wired certain houses. You know, if you were on the main road and you were lucky enough to have a few bucks, you got a wire to your house. And that put a light bulb in each room and I think one outlet in each room. I'm not sure that every room in our house had an outlet, though, in later years. But yes, the power came on in the morning, I don't know, probably 5 o'clock, and at 10 o'clock at night, it went off. So there was a signal. The lights would blink. It's time to get to bed because the lights are going out. There was no lights during the night.
Did you use kerosene lanterns for the rest of the time? I mean, if you had a light in one room and you wanted to do something in another room, was there a kerosene lantern?
We had kerosene lights. Well, actually, most of ours were the gas lanterns with the mantles. They gave better light than the kerosene. But true, you had a lamp and you carried it from room to room, and that went, you know, that was the way we were. And wood stoves, we didn't have ice boxes. We didn't have an ice man. There was no ice truck came around, so we didn't have refrigerators. I mean, you just found the coolest place there was to put something, and that's where it went.
And what light did you take with you when you had to go to the outhouse?
Well, if you were lucky and you owned a flashlight, I guess, but it was a lantern. Now, you know what a lantern is? Well, that's what we had. If you had to go to the barn, you took a lantern. I mean, that's the way it was.
Mm. We're doing this interview pre-recorded at Ali and Oscar Smalder's house. And when Mary and I drove up the driveway, she said, "Wow, this is an experience, a road I've never been on Lopez Island," which surprised me. You know, I just think Mary was born just around the corner, been here since age 10. Certainly she knows every inch of this island, which of course is not true. But that led Mary to telling us too that when she was a child here, there weren't very many roads at all. Can you tell us a little more about that?
No, there was really just the main roads. I mean, you went from point A to point B, and you didn't see all these side roads. You know, a few private roads that went into the farm, but they didn't have names on them. You just knew who lived there. We weren't out naming roads. No, there were very few. And I needn't tell you that they were gravel, and in the winter they got like washboards and mud puddles and all that. But yeah, things have come a long ways.
Did someone tell us along the line that Dill Road in the winter was unpassable, the swale in Dill Road, so some roads couldn't even be used in the rainy months?
Well, that happened many years later when even at Hummel Lake it would come over the road. Mm-hmm. But no, I suppose there were places that were not as, you know, low spots and all, but we just mucked through them.
Did you swim in Hummel Lake?
Nope, never. Well, I didn't even learn to swim. But the water at the beaches were so cold. I mean, we'd go in and that was about enough. No, we, for some reason, we did not go to Hummel Lake much. We would go to what we call Todd's Beach at Richardson or Agate Beach or Rodland Park. You know, that was, again, take the picnic lunch and on a Sunday, which was the only day you could go off to those things. And
Mary, do you miss anything from the old days?
No, what was to miss? Well, it was a totally different time of life. It was, you know, everybody looked out for each other. Everybody was, you know, we laugh about the Lopez time here now. But actually, it started way back when, because nobody was in a hurry. You had time for your neighbor. You had time for just stuff. It wasn't, nobody was looking at their watch. Maybe they didn't even have a watch, I don't know. But they didn't, it wasn't a rush, gotta be there, gotta do this. Of course, there was no television, there was no, I guess some of us had radios, but there was nothing to, other than to get the cows in at the right time, and I guess the mail came through on schedule and a few other things, but.
When did county government start?
What do you mean by county government?
Well, in Friday Harbor?
Well,
in Friday Harbor?
Yes. That was our county seat, uh-huh. And that was the courthouse, and everything, all business took place in Friday Harbor. I think it still does. I don't think you can do much over here without going to Friday Harbor.
So, ladies, I think we're about to the end of our interview here. I guess I want to ask Allie, does she have anything else to ask? And also to ask Mary, are there any other stories or any other things that you'd like people to know about today while we're here together?
I was thinking of cooking. Did you have an outdoor kitchen in the summertime, like many places had in the United States?
Nope. We fired up the wood stove and just sweat it out in the kitchen. We didn't have, no. Actually, you know, we had 4-H, and so we could go and learn to cook. I made biscuits and took them, I don't know how they got them, to Friday Harbor to the county fair while they were still fresh, but I got a blue ribbon. No, you know, everybody had wood stoves. That was the way things were done. Never occurred to us to go out in the yard and have a barbecue.
So it sounds to me like you guys worked hard, like as kids, you worked hard, and the chores, and I can see you nodding your head here, chores on the farm, but also that times were slower down, and that sounds, when you spoke about that, a lot of peace came into your voice too. Mm-hmm. So slower, but also hard work in those early days in the 20s or 30s.
Yes, it was a hard life, it really was. But, you know, I think lots of things changed, like in about the 50s. People started buying property here, and well, I guess we all found out that there was a life off Lopez somewhere, so we would go and try it out.
But it sounds to me like, from what you tell us, we can learn quite a bit, because with the economic situation what it is, we may very well have to go back to much simpler times, and paying attention to the way it was once upon a time may be just a thing to do. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, Mary Harris, Mary McLeod Harris, for being with us today.